Outpatient Center.
The Kids Academy in Sheridan reminds listeners that the holidays are a special time of year for caring, sharing, and remembering everything we're grateful for. For many local families, the holidays are not such a joyous occasion. Make sure you drop off a canned good or food item to your local parish or donation center and make this season brighter for an underprivileged child throughout our area. The Kids Academy in Sheridan gives your child tender, loving care in a safe learning environment. KidsAcademySheridan.com or 675-8287.
If you're hunting in bear country this fall, some reminders. Keep attractants in camp inaccessible to bears. Bears who find food rewards often come back. Bears are packing on fat for hibernation, so keep a lookout for signs of bear, tracks, scat, digging. Think about hunting with a partner and pack out your harvest as soon as possible. If you have to leave it, try to hang it up or be able to see it from a distance. And remember bear spray. It's effective, so keep it handy and know how to use it. Sponsored by the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This public service message is presented by BHJ Property Management at 101 South Main.
Follow in the footsteps, hoof prints, and stagecoach tracks of history while enjoying fresh air and fun outside on Sheridan Community Land Trust History on the Soldier Ridge Trail walking tour. Enjoy this tour on the ground and virtually with the Travel Stories GPS app. Find this in all of Sheridan Community Land Trust driving and walking tours under the History tab at SheridanCLT.org.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, November 5th. From Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning we are joined by Sheridan Police Department Chief Travis Koltiska and Captain Tom Ringley. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Floyd.
Morning, morning. Floyd.
How are things down at the PD, Chief?
Good. Yeah, things are going well. We're we had some, people may have seen some Facebook posts that we had some issues with our 911 service last week. We installed some new hardware that caused some interference, some connective issues with the vendors, but we got it all ironed out. Everything's working fantastic now. So yeah, you know, like technology, you never know what's going to happen, and everything is technological based anymore. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate anyone's patience and understanding. If they needed to call, we have a great partnership with the Buffalo Police Department and their dispatch center. So calls were actually rolling to that center.
Oh, wow.
And like to really thank all of them over there that helped us out during this time. But yeah, our people were just, they put in a lot of hours helping our vendors work through this, solve this solution. So that was a little bit of a headache.
Hiccup, yeah.
Yeah, but we got things rolling, so we're good to go now.
Steve Sisson here, our tech guy, he's great. He's got to update computers every now and then, and everybody kind of just stands on edge for a little while these things are updating because we don't know what it's going to interfere with. So I can, you know, yours is an emergency matter. Ours is just kind of more of an inconvenience. And
if we could for a second, I think it's important to recognize our two-man city IT department.
Yeah.
None of this was on them. It was all vendor related, and they cracked the whip on the vendors. But not only that, they do a kind of unsung heroes of the city. They
absolutely
do a great job every day keeping all the systems in the city running.
And I'll tell you, it's one of those positions that I'm not going to go as far as to say thankless, unsung heroes.
Unsung, yes.
They really keep the city running, and the chief is right. Everything kind of runs on that technological base now. So we need you guys out there, and thank you for all that you do. How did Halloween go?
It went. And I say that in the best possible way. We had no incidents that were related to trick-or-treaters or Halloween parties.
Great
it
news.
Was a very responsible Friday night for everyone. The weather was actually not hovering around 10 degrees, so that was nice for everyone. And it was just a nice community evening.
That's fantastic to hear. I think we talked about it a little bit, you know, DWUIs. Friday, Halloween, a lot of parties going on. It's good to hear that everybody kept it within the boundaries. That's great.
Yeah, I think we only had one or two DUIs that weekend, and they weren't related to
Halloween parties.
Halloween that we could tell.
Fantastic. That is fantastic news. Was downtown pretty busy on Friday night?
I don't know. I wasn't.
you weren't out.
It can pick up. You know, we want downtown to be busy every night. So if it was, it was busy in the best possible way. It was people out having a good time responsibly.
I can tell you, going through a couple of our neighborhoods in the early evening, they were packed with kids and trick-or-treaters. It was fantastic to see. And I mean, like, literally packed.
Yeah.
The cars parked all over, kids knocking on doors. So, and I think a lot of it, like Captain said, is attributed to if we had decent weather. And, you know, it's still Sheridan. It's a great community, and people get out and go do that. So that was, it was nice to see. So that they were out early, and by the time that 9 o'clock hour rolled around, that's when the trick-or-treating kind of stopped and everything got quiet again. And then, yeah, there was some activity downtown, but nothing out of the ordinary for a weekend, actually.
That's
even
so
on
great.
Halloween, which we're very grateful that, you know, people went out there and were responsible, and that's good.
Yeah, and regarding the weather, Halloween is so much more fun when you don't have to put on your great big coat over top of your costume. I remember being a kid, and gosh, too many Halloweens. You got to wear your coat outside. So I got to the point where I started to incorporate a coat into the costume.
Right.
How often does the Sheridan Police Department receive calls or complaints about parking violations within the city limits?
It's a common call. It's not, and it really is circumstantial. It depends on what the parking issue is. Is it an issue with some vehicle appears to be abandoned and has been there an extensive period of time? Is it parked on somebody's private property? Is it causing a hazard, right? Is it broke down in an intersection, or is it parked blocking a driveway, which can impede somebody's, if they need to leave in an emergency, they can't get out of their driveway. So they do, they're regular occurrence. That kind of one of those calls that we're used to handling. I wouldn't say daily, but sometimes, it could be one or two in a day, and it really, really kind of circumstantial.
You know, in today's day and age, just about everybody has a car. Some families, two,
multiple,
to three. Yeah,
it's not, and we've talked about that before. I think when we all grew up, there were maybe two cars in the family.
Yeah,
and now, as soon as you're 15 or 16, every kid's got a car, and so some of these families that have a few kids could have five or six cars, and kids are staying at home later, not moving out of the house as soon. So sometimes there are families that have five or six cars in their family.
Wow.
Yeah. That's just what we have today's day.
Everyone's kind of doing their own thing. And that freedom of having your own car, I mean, that's one that we've talked about frequently on here. What's the most common parking issue residents contact the department about?
I'd say it's the time limit parking. Vehicle that has been parked too long in the location in violation of code, or appears to be abandoned. Inoperable and in a condition that is just, like, I don't want to say junked because that's not the right word for it, but a vehicle that has debris around it. And now when we get into the wintertime months, you know, then we're talking, you know, blocking the snow route or inability of a plow to actually properly clear the streets. Those are other issues, but I'd say the most common is probably the time limit.
Now, what is the 48-hour time limit on street parking, and how do we enforce that?
Fully operative motor vehicle, which can be a truck, car, trailer, can be parked abutting the property of the person residing on the property for 48 hours.
Okay.
So I can, not their property. Like, I can go abut your property for 48 hours. On my own property, I can park on the street.
However long
as I want to. Yeah.
But if I've got a strange vehicle outside my door.
Yeah.
It's got 48 hours.
It's 48 hours. And we realize that there's, like we just said, there's more vehicles on the road than ever now, and they've got to go somewhere. So we won't respond if someone just doesn't like having a car parked out abutting their property for an hour or a day. But once that 48-hour mark passes, then they're in violation of the ordinance.
That's interesting. I've never heard of that before. And I think we've all had at least one instance in our life where that strange car was outside for far too long.
Yep.
So after 48 hours, if there's a car out there that isn't mine, I can call the SPD and say, you know, I think this needs a little looking into.
Yeah, and then we will put an abandoned vehicle sticker on it, which gives notice to the owner that they need to move it. And we also, you know, we're just not going to wait to tow it. We will make efforts to contact the owner and ask them to move the vehicle. But ultimately, if it's parked there, we can't get a hold of the owner, or the owner doesn't respond, or the vehicle's inoperable and they can't move it, then we will unfortunately have to tow it.
Where do we take vehicles once they're towed?
We have a list of, in Wyoming, to have a tow company, you have to, for lack of a better term, have a certified storage yard, a safe and secure storage yard. So each tow company takes a vehicle to their storage location.
We just have them on a rotation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
As each one comes up, it's whoever's next in line with the tow companies that are registered and licensed.
Multiple.
Within.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's four or five. I don't know the exact number. So it's just on a rotation. And when officers or CSOs call for a tow, the dispatch center pulls up the list, who's next in a rotation, calls them, and that's how it's handled. And it goes to their impound lot.
And so that could be any location within Sheridan.
Yes.
I mentioned those. Since you said there's four or five, they're probably not all in one region.
People, 48 hours may not sound like a long time, but when it's stickered, then that kind of, the sticker gives an amount of time. I think 24 hours.
24.
Okay. So they get an extra day.
Okay, but it's stickered after 48.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you got another probably 24 hours.
Yes.
To really take action on that.
But the time almost always errs on goes to the vehicle owner. It's like, it's probably been, it's not like the residents are sitting there waiting for our 48 to pass and then call. And then the CS usually wants community service officers handling. So it's when they come get back on duty. So we're definitely just not towing vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing everything we can to mitigate the circumstances.
Yeah, because I'll admit, even I had to leave a vehicle once. I didn't abandon it. We went down there the very next day and picked it up, but I had a water pump go out on me.
Yep.
And we were in the middle of travel, me and my daughter. I had to pull off, call a friend, come pick me up, and we had to leave it there on the freeway.
It's a balancing act between it's a public street and also, but the residents should have that expectation that they don't have to look at someone else's vehicle outside the residence.
Or take up a spot that they could be using.
Absolutely. I think, which is probably a big issue. I think a lot of individuals out there have had to, you know, negotiate with neighbors or whatever if they're having gatherings to kind of get that extra parking spot. I will admit that even myself, I think I take up too many parking spots where I live. I got some very tolerant neighbors. I thank all of them for it. But what qualifies as a fully operative motor vehicle underneath the city code itself?
It works. It runs. It can be moved. All four tires are up. A fairly common complaint is that people call in a vehicle with a flat tire. So that's not fully operative.
And legally registered.
And it's got to be registered because it's being operated. To get to that parking spot,
It has to be
operative. It doesn't matter if the vehicle's rusting out or how it looks, as long as it can be safely moved and is registered.
Parts aren't falling off down the street.
Yeah, and, you know, once driving around town, you see a drive line hanging underneath a truck, or you can see that the engine's up, kind of being supported by jack stands or something underneath this, and that's probably a pretty good indication that it's not operable.
Yeah. Now, how does the rule apply to residents who park vehicles directly in front of their own homes? You said that doesn't apply to them.
The 48-hour limit does not apply, but they still have to be fully operative. On there, so they can park there as long as they want, indefinitely, as long as it's fully operative and registered. If it's abutting their property,
okay,
and that's the key to it.
But if it's not registered and it's not operable, it changes up.
Yeah, that's correct. Then it's, you know, you can't leave junked vehicles on the street, on a public street, essentially, or anything that's, I hate using that word, but I don't know if there's another definition. A vehicle that's not operative, you cannot leave
on the street,
regardless if it's abutting your own property.
So that has got to either be towed, pulled, pushed, dragged up into the property itself.
And there's rules governing that, too, that we don't talk about much, but that's kind of covered more in the code compliance side with premise. You know, there's limits on how many vehicles you can have stored on your private property, what condition they're in, the location of them. So there's limits surrounding that as well. There's ordinances covering that as well.
You don't want a bunch of rusted out cars in your neighbor's yard. I mean, that's kind of an unsightly, mm-hmm. you know.
No, because sooner or later, it could be considered a junkyard.
Yeah.
It's
a hazardous situation, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
An environmental hazard and a safety hazard. Now, to throw a slight curveball into all this, trailers.
What's the difference there?
If I own a trailer, and a trailer not connected to a vehicle, can only be left outside, even abutting my property for 48 hours, if it's not connected to a vehicle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it's immobile, so it's basically... not a fully operating vehicle if it's just can't move.
Gotcha.
But if it's attached to a truck or a car or a fully functional vehicle, then it's good to go.
Kind of like, I see some of these hardworking guys out there, guys and girls, who've got the trailer full of all their tools and their equipment that they just kind of keep out there so they can jump in and get going the next morning. Yes. That's okay because it's attached to the work truck. All right.
And also if they're driving it to work every day or Monday through Friday, and it sits over the weekend, and if it's disconnected over the weekend, then they hook back up.
And if it's a construction trailer that's doing active work, we're lenient on that, and so are most neighbors. But my suggestion is, if somebody sees that and they talk to your neighbor, say, "Hey, we're doing some remodel on our house, and the construction company's going to have their work trailer here. I hope that's okay. Hope you don't mind. We'll make efforts to not make it a hindrance to you in any way, shape, or form. But we're very lenient about that, and because that's an unusual circumstance, right? Most of these complaints are like, I got my camper, it's winter time, I'm not camping anymore, and I'm just going to park it on the street in front of my house and leave it sit there. And that's just not authorized.
I can completely see as to why. I do have to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more with our Sheridan Police Department right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Community Cupboard.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Join the Wild Theater for the National Theater live performance of Tennessee Williams' classic, A Streetcar Named Desire, Thursday, November 13th at 6 p.m. Blanche DuBois moves to New Orleans to live with her sister Stella, creating clashes between Blanche and Stella's husband Stanley, which pushes her into insanity. See the twists and turns for yourself. Tickets are available now at the Wild Theater box office or online at wildtheater.com. A Streetcar Named Desire, Thursday, November 13th.
Okay, we set the clocks back, so now I get a whole nother hour of can't sleep. Well, the same goes for you thinking you can fix or tune up your own 4x4, snowmobile, or side-by-side. Because that extra hour of frustration still won't make you a mechanic. Bring it to Hando's Service Center, where the Hando's pros get it done the first time, fast turnarounds, fair prices, and winter-ready performance. Hando's Service Center. More horsepower, less headache on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Ready to own a space that works like you do? Come get synergized this Saturday afternoon at the Synergy Shop Aminium's Open House. Experience the concept of the customizable open warehouse design. Your toys, your tools, your business, all under one roof. Synergy Shop Aminium's on East Ridge Road near the Animal Shelter. This Saturday from 1 to 3. For details, call Donna Garland at Sheridan Realty Associates.
This public service announcement brought to you by Atlas Chiropractic. Your healing begins when you pick up the phone.
Discover the connection between bodywork, pain, and mental health. Join NAMI Sheridan's free bodywork workshop Monday, November 17th at St. Peter's Episcopal Church with Ali Wilson and the much-needed bodywork staff. Dinner at 5:30, presentation at 6:30. Free childcare available, and everyone is welcome.
Ha back. Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with Sheridan Police Department Chief Travis Koltiska and Captain of the Force, Tom Ringley. Now, we're discussing the city's parking ordinances and issues regarding trailers and abandoned vehicles. One thing that we were talking about is codes. Sometimes there's a little bit of confusion. Is there any discussion about clarifying parts of code in the future to reduce any confusion? Chief, you said it kind of ebbs and flows.
Well, I think the ordinance is pretty clear on the timelines. One of the things that, and it's not necessarily codified, but the word moved. So like a vehicle can't, and that's come out of some rulings by previous municipal court judges, is like if this vehicle has been moved, then it's, you know, if it's been sitting there for 48 hours and they quote unquote move the vehicle, but to the degree of the movement is not defined. So it can cause some, you know, the intent is for it, them not to back it up 6 inches. That's not going to classify as moved. Webster's Dictionary says moved, it's been moved, but that's not the intent of the ordinance. So we would address that. So, and occasionally we have a couple people that do that.
Yeah.
You know, and we're like, no, not going to work.
trying to find the way around. I get
it. And so there was discussion of that. Do we have a need? And if it becomes a real issue, then we could clarify it and address code to address that very problem.
When you do that, let's say if you do want to just clarify something, you're like, you know, that's too broad. Mm-hmm. Let's narrow that. Do you get with magistrates or the city council? Who really determines?
So the process is our city attorney would recommend language in the ordinance change that would address it. Then it would go before a study session of the city council where they'd explain the problem. Here's what we're doing to address it. And then three readings, because it's an ordinance change, which requires three readings of the governing body and approval of the governing body.
Okay.
So it's a process.
So, it's a process, but
sure.
I mean, it helps.
Absolutely.
Now, how does the department handle vehicles that appear abandoned or unlicensed? If someone pulls up to some place and they're like, I don't want this car anymore, they just strip the plates off. And I think we've all actually seen this happen. Yeah. Then they literally abandon a vehicle.
Then we go through the 48-hour vehicle stickering process. The CS community service officer will put in an abandoned vehicle / intent to tow sticker on it, try to contact, because they still got a VIN, hopefully. And they will do everything they can to have the owner move it. And if not, then it will be towed.
Chief, when it comes to differences between city ordinances and Wyoming state law, are there any, or do we fall directly underneath there?
So we apply both, and no, that don't necessarily fall underneath statutes, because there is a deal called home rule where a lot of the laws will apply. So part of our code, we use both code and statute when we're dealing with abandoned vehicles, especially when it comes to stuff on private property. Something that often happens is a property owner will call and say, somebody abandoned this vehicle on there, and they left it, and they want us to tow it right away, and we cannot by statute. Code doesn't address it because statute already does. By statute, we have to sticker it, and that's got to sit for five. If I remember correctly, it's been a long time since I dealt with this. We have to leave it for at least 5 days.
Oh, wow.
So but city code on a public street, because the city owns the public street, controls the public street, maintenance, all that, we can address that. Private property, different ball of wax. Now, the property owner could call a tow truck right then and there and have it removed.
Oh, really? And so if they took mm-hmm. the initiative to go ahead and get it done themselves, it could be gone.
It could be. And we tell them that if they call and complain, say, well, we have to sticker it, and it'll sit here for another 5 days, but you as a property owner can't.
But would cost them?
No, because tow companies will get there from the owner of the vehicle, who when they come to claim it, then there's going to cost of the tow, the cost of any impound fees, time, however long it sat there. Or if it's truly abandoned, there's salvage material and motor. And so the tow companies go through a process to get the ownership of the vehicle. And this applies to both public street and private property. If we tow one off of that is abandoned, nobody ever claims it. And either it's in good shape or it's not, the tow company will get paperwork that grants them ownership after a certain, I think it's 30 days from the sheriff's department, because it's a process going from us to the sheriff's department. If they want to, they apply for a title at the courthouse, then they can sell the vehicle. Or if they just want to send it to a scrapyard and use the metal in that vehicle as sell it for scrap, they can do that as well.
I can remember my father once bought a Wagoneer from an auction.
When they were made of metal.
Boy, big. That was a big vehicle. And it was fantastic. He loved the thing. That's a side story. You and I will, in a sidebar. But do we hold auctions like that anymore? Does that happen? Does that take place? Or was there some problems in the past that they now were done with that?
That'd be the responsibility of, if it was an auction of any sort. The police department does not, because we never assume possession or ownership of any vehicles. I don't believe the sheriff's office does. It's usually done through the tow companies.
Okay.
I could be wrong, though. It'd be a better question for Sheriff Dominguez or Lieutenant Sanders when they come on next time.
I just remember Dad got that, some things happened. It was a pretty interesting story. I'll tell you later. Now, are there any exceptions for recreation vehicles? Let's say travel trailers, snowmobiles, side-by-sides on trailers, things like that.
No, a trailer is a trailer regardless of what's on it. And like I said, we're not driving around town staying a watch on vehicles. It's almost always complaint driven by property owners or neighbors.
We already talked about hobbyists and restoration projects fitting into this rule. What'd you say, Chief? It's just a good idea. Just go talk to your neighbors.
Yeah, and oftentimes, I mean, there are the ordinances governing parking or leaving inoperable vehicles unlicensed, and it's, the ordinance says abandoned or junk. Pretty clear. Even leaving them on your property, having too many, is considered a nuisance, and it's a violation of city code. But there are exceptions to that. I would advise people to look it up under Article 18-2 in the code without having to read this full paragraph right here on the air right now. But, you know, people that are restoring a vehicle, and that's quite common, and I would love to know how to do that myself. I would do it myself if I knew how. They're restoring a vehicle. They can have that vehicle as long as there's active restoration process going on. I'll just paraphrase the whole ordinance. Or oftentimes they have donor cars, right? You got the same model. You're using parts from one car to the other. They can have that as well. But again, there's got to be some process of active restoration, and they've got to show progress through that. And then they can have it. And again, it's still limited. I think it may be 7. I'm just going off the top of my head. 7 vehicles, I think, is all they can have on there at max, which is a lot, depending
That's
on the
quite
house
a
size,
few, yeah.
How big your lot is. So, but if it becomes an issue, then yeah. They cannot leaving of 7 or more, so you can only have 6. Not much of a difference, but.
So the idea of, you know, the dad and daughter, dad and son going out, restoring the old vehicle so they could have their first
fantastic
car or truck.
That's a great thing to do as long as it's done in a manner that falls along with code. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Now, when it comes to considerable tri-monthly progress, what does that mean in practical terms for those working on these classic or antique cars?
Well, if it comes an issue and a complaint, and this would be handled more with the code compliance officer in the building department because it's a property code issue, right? But considerably tri-monthly progress is seeing active work being done on that vehicle. You know, if all of a sudden that there's a complaint made and the car's covered and it's covered for 6 months, or it's got, you know, become a storage table and there's stuff, debris on it, it gets pretty obvious that a vehicle's there's active work. And this is also, this is the vehicles that are exposed to public view on the property. If they're inside a building, you've got a big garage in there you're working on. You know, it takes you 10 years to rebuild your car. It takes you 10 years to rebuild your car. But yeah, considerable tri-monthly progress is, you know, it is a little subjective, but it, you know, when you know, you see it, when you see it, you know it, right?
Yeah. As long as there's progressive progress actually taking place.
Some sort of progression on the restoration, you're good to go.
Is there anything else you would like the public to know or keep in mind regarding city parking ordinances, trailers, abandoned vehicles, anything that we didn't touch on?
No, the issue is twofold. One is safety. If you are parking in a neighborhood abutting to someone else's property, don't block their driveway. Don't block an intersection. Don't block a fire hydrant. And the other side is quality of life. We want Sheridan to look nice, and that's probably a part of this ordinance too, is we just want people to enjoy where they live and have to look across the street at a drive line hanging out the bottom of a vehicle.
And I'll tell you, that's one thing, not to add on that, is, you know, you can't do active restoration or modifications on a public street. And that is, to the captain's point, that is a huge safety issue. If you've got a vehicle that's sitting on four jacks, one kid crawling underneath it, and then coming off a jack, think about those things. It's got to be safe and secure for any of that restoration. It's got to be on your property.
Yeah, and I can completely understand that as well. Just the idea of a little one playing around that kind of stuff. All right. Well, I want to thank you both so much for coming in and talking about this. This is an issue that I don't think we've really touched on too much before, and I think it's fantastic that we do clarify a couple of things. So thank you.
Thanks, Floyd.
Absolutely. Thanks, Floyd.
All right. When we come back, we're going to speak with Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. Stay with us. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Building a strong financial future starts with knowing the basics.
That's why First Federal Bank and Trust partners with schools and organizations to bring financial literacy to life.
We offer free resources tailored to your group, interactive bank tours, hands-on materials, and real conversations with our banking professionals.
It's a smart, practical way to prepare the next generation.
Learn more or request a speaker at efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust.
Investing in strong financial futures.
What would Christmas be without tradition? Without the comfort of home, the joy of family, and smiles of children? Open your heart this year during the 26th annual Christmas Wish Campaign. Due to temporary circumstances beyond their control, some families, friends, and neighbors will struggle to make ends meet, let alone have a Merry Christmas. It's tradition for the Christmas Wish Campaign to bring the spirit of the holidays to those individuals. In the past, we've assisted several people with everything from bills and food to clothing, Christmas trees, and toys for children.
Please send your Christmas wish nominations and donations to P.O. Box 5086 Sheridan or submit them online at SheridanMedia.com as soon as possible. All wishes must be submitted in writing and must include your name and phone number. There are follow-up questions our committee will need to have answered to properly assess each wish. Wishes must be received by Friday, November 29th.
Partners for this year's Christmas Wish Campaign are First Federal Bank and Trust, Heartland Kubota, Advanced Auto Body, Wyoming Corporate Office, Odell Construction, and A-Line Roofing and Exteriors.
Shan Foster, all-around canine training and country pet in. You love it when a dog surprises you in a training, and that happened recently when you were training a service dog for someone with MS.
Yeah, a challenge. So I watched the dog and the owner work together and just stayed out of it. What I saw was amazing. Goosebumps just thinking about it. She was adopting behavior that would make them more productive, something I didn't teach her. She just offset things that I taught her to what she felt were necessary to accomplish whatever tasks they were performing. Pretty cool.
Yeah, so even for as many years as you've been doing this, you can still get surprised.
Oh, I know, and that's one of the things about dog training that I love. It's magical. Two beings that don't look anything alike, and they're forming this union. It's the best feeling. It really is. It's hard to describe, but people in their lives with their dogs in different capacities have probably seen little bits and pieces of this as well. And I just get to see it, I think, more often.
Learn more at countrypetin.com.
Mossholder's Design Center is running its final dining room sale of the year. That means you can save on all in-stock dining room furniture and have a brand new look in time for Thanksgiving and Christmas. Mossholder's also has a large in-stock selection of bar stools, so you can add seating for all your guests this holiday season. Even if you can't find your perfect set in-store, Mossholder's is discounting all special orders too, so you can order the style that best fits your home. Shop early for the best in-stock selection and have it in time for the holiday. That's Mossholder's Dining. Swing on now. Mossholder's, furniture is our passion.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, we're joined by Johnson County Commission Chairman, Mr. Bill Novotny. Good morning, sir. Welcome back.
Good morning, Floyd. It is great to be with you this morning.
Oh, it's a brisk November, isn't it? How are you feeling over there? What's the weather like in Buffalo?
You know, I don't know what time you left this morning, but it's gorgeous. It's in the 40s, a little light wind, but we're actually having a fall. This is good stuff.
Yeah. Now, how'd your Halloween go this year over there in Johnson County, sir?
Well, if you took part in the Monster March, you know that it was a roaring good success. I think probably close to 1,000 kids at some point, either on the front end by the museum or snuck in somewhere along the route, got out there, and just a real testament to the community support of the kids and making sure they have a great opportunity. The chamber did a really nice job of organizing that. They had a bounce house. I didn't get to see it because I guess it was a little further down Main Street as we were passing out candy at the courthouse, but there was a flash mob. So just really another great positive experience and a great way to enjoy the Halloween. Although I will say trick-or-treaters were a little down on our street this year. Oh. So either they loaded up at the Monster March, which isn't real good for me, because that means I had to finish what didn't get passed out.
I was going to say, yeah, I think there's a lot of us who have a bowl of candy sitting in the house, and I just can't stay away from that stuff. Chairman, big news, as Sheridan College has recently announced plans for a new campus in Buffalo. What will this expansion mean for our Johnson County students?
Two facets there, Floyd. So for the kids that are in that dual and concurrent enrollment at Buffalo High School or New West or down in KC, hopefully it's going to mean even more opportunities to do career and technical education, get some more of those electives out of the way. Should they choose to go on to college, that those are already taken care of so they can really get in there, focus on their majors, and hopefully give kids an opportunity to get out of school in 4 years with very little or maybe even no debt from their undergraduate. For a kid that maybe doesn't want to be on a college track, that wants to be on a career track or a military track, great opportunity to expand offering in welding and plumbing, electrical, hopefully HVAC, maybe some additional computer work, and certainly one that we're really very proud of here that supports the mission up at the Veterans Home, as well as all the healthcare facilities, that CNA and also that healthcare track for folks that want to go on and become a nurse. So really just some great opportunity when you have a facility that can handle that type of programming. And let's be honest, we've grown by leaps and bounds. We started out, as Jack Tarter reminded us, in a conference room in the back of the old Crossroads Inn, and then they were in the basement under the movie theater, and then they moved over to the Clear Creek wing of what is now Bomber Mountain Civic Center. And so they've grown, but we've always had them in a spot where they were limited by their offerings because it's real hard to put a welding shop in an old elementary school classroom.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, but that's absolutely fantastic. Watching this, although slow progression, a progression in itself, the partnership between Sheridan College and the county, how did that develop over the last few years? What were some of those conversations like once the decision was made? Let's purchase some property. Let's build a campus.
Well, we have enjoyed close to a 30-year relationship. I can actually say that I was in high school when this started, and I was able to take 10 college credits out to Michigan State with me from Sheridan College. So long-standing relationship that goes back for many, many years. And we have been a supporter and funder over the years, whether it was to purchase equipment, help with facilities costs. And so all along, though, we've kind of had the conversation with them. At some point, you have to decouple Sheridan College from the Bomber Mountain Civic Center, because that's really not a long-term viable solution for them. And so they finally decided that it was time to make that. And I just think it's a fantastic move for everyone.
And just to kind of reaffirm this, this is going to focus primarily career, technical education, and academic transfer programs, correct?
It is. And the nice thing, and I'm very pleased to be sitting on the steering committee that's going to look at putting this facility together, is making sure that we have a space that is incredibly flexible. And so, you know, there will be some classroom space so that you can offer English or those basic courses that people are trying to get while they're over here, or also our community interest classes, whether it's painting or fly tying, but making sure that we have that base space there so that the next need in our workforce here that we can develop it and offer it and not have to have a new facility built. So really building the most flexible space you can that you can offer wood shop in it, and then in an hour that it turns and you're offering plumbing or something else.
What kind of timeline are we looking at here, sir? I mean, groundbreaking, facility built, do we have that laid out?
I think what President Tribble has laid out is hopefully about a two-year process. And so get the steering committee together, make decisions on exactly what we want, send it to the architect, and then get a design. And what's nice, there are already funds available to pay for this, so it's not one that you're going to be chasing dollars to get it built. I think the question on chasing dollars are going to be if we want to add enhancements to it. But those are things that certainly can be done down the road, or we can work on finding the dollars for the specific equipment that's going to go into teaching those kids to weld. Or we've already got that simulator for truck driving, and get that CDL program even more readily available for folks.
Sir, let's turn over to the House Draw Fire. How much of an impact have recent federal shutdowns had on recovery and reclamation efforts out there?
Well, unfortunately, we had to forego treating about 5,000 acres of BLM land for cheatgrass, and that's just purely because they shut down as we were trying to get our good neighbor authority done, and we're hopeful that we'll still be able to get that good neighbor set up and we can treat those areas this spring. But unfortunately, it was just too late in the process to redirect flights, and certainly you couldn't ask the Conservation District to risk doing a $400,000 outlay in airtime and chemical and not get reimbursed for treating those acres of federal ground that the BLM asked them to treat. So it's really unfortunate. Certainly we're watching also folks in our community that are relying on SNAP and other programs, just exactly what's going to happen to them in the next couple days. But it's really unfortunate that they couldn't get the paperwork done correctly, and so we had to forego treating some areas that could become hotbeds for cheatgrass.
Absolutely. Something that is a big concern. Trying to have as many conversations regarding the prevention and the reclamation from these burn scars as I can. There are so many people out there working, doing their best to try and prevent these hotbeds from sprouting up. And it's just disheartening to me to see that, you know, we're not getting much backup.
We're not. And you want in, and certainly I do want to be clear, though, it's not the folks in the local BLM office that aren't helping us and have our back. It's above them at the state and the federal level, which is really unfortunate. But in all of that, I do want to point out that we did have some additional good news out there. The Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resources Trust Fund has committed some additional money to treat that cheatgrass. And so we are going to be able to treat all 174,000 acres provided that the BLM wants theirs treated, and then also, of course, the private landowners out there always have that option of opting out. But we do have the means and the resources now that we will be able to treat that entire burn scar.
Sir, are there lingering challenges House Draw Fire that residents should still be aware of as we go into winter?
Well, certainly, you know, we're all concerned with the decline in wildlife in the area, whether it's mule deer, antelope, or sage grouse. And so just folks, as we transition out of hunting season and allow the wildlife out there that is out there to just kind of be undisturbed, if we can do that. Certainly this time of year, we need to remember that principle of treading lightly. This is a real bad time to go off-road of those designated roads and trails out there and tear up that ground. And when you tear up that area that's already been disturbed, you spread a seed bed, and then you also create new opportunities for erosion. And so we've got to still remember that it is under recovery right now, and those reclamation efforts don't need to be put backwards because somebody decided it'd be fun to go four-wheeling across one of those areas that has just started to regrow.
And you know, I think there's so many other opportunities and locations to be able to do something like that, that I just feel like you avoiding that area shouldn't be too much of an inconvenience for anybody. Speaking about getting out, getting around, let's talk about county infrastructure. Last time you and I spoke, Crazy Woman Canyon Bridge and the roadway projects were just wrapping up. I tried to get some folks out there to see those beautiful leaves changing. I do remember you bringing that up. How did it go? Are you hearing anything?
I'm hearing from folks that they really enjoyed the opportunity that after that got opened up, and folks need to be reminded. They do have a couple more weeks to go through Crazy Woman Canyon before they do that seasonal close when you get that first good snowstorm in there. So please, there maybe aren't as many leaves as there were just between the wind and the weather, but get out there and enjoy Crazy Woman. Of course, you can head on further up to Hazleton and see that parking lot that is there ready for anybody that's got a snow machine or a snow coach or just wants to jump off in their cross-country skis. You know, Hazleton will get shut down just like Crazy Woman Canyon does. That's a summer seasonal road, but that beautiful new recreational parking lot is there and available for folks to use this winter. It's easily signed, and so you just pull right in there. We have an agreement with YDOT that allows them to plow the road as they're doing their regular highway maintenance up to the entrance of that parking lot. So you'll be able to get in there year-round this winter. So please take advantage of that. And then also out at Lake DeSmit on the north end, we've got a lot of the work done out there, and we're going to hopefully have that open and available for the ice fishermen this year. So another opportunity there to park and walk down to the lake and enjoy your public recreational assets.
Sir, you and so many others been working on that North End Access project out there at Lake DeSmit. I don't know how long. How long have you really been working on that? I want to say it's been since I was writing for the newspaper over there.
Floyd, you're spot on. And actually, that predates me as a commissioner. They had initially approached the previous landowner of the shores of Lake DeSmit about buying that piece of land and couldn't get a deal done. So this has been about 15 years in the making.
Wow.
About the time Johnson County took control of Lake DeSmit independent from Sheridan and Campbell County, they've been working on that. And we have a beautiful area. I've seen preliminary sketches of the Game and Fish's design for the boat ramp, the boat docks, and the parking area. And it was a little over-designed for what the budget was, because they are going to be using Game and Fish dollars to pay for that amenities out there, like the comfort station. And so they're reworking their design, and our hope is that you'll see a beautiful boat ramp, and certainly it'll be open regardless of that next summer.
I think that's fantastic. You know, more access to that lake, the better. Having to drive around to the other boat ramp can be a little inconvenient, take a little bit longer. And it, you know, I have seen it get congested down there, especially during a lot of the fishing seasons. Any big plans for Thanksgiving this year, sir?
You know, it's always good to just be home with friends and family. And certainly I know I won't get an opportunity to visit with you until after Thanksgiving, but got some wonderful things over the holiday season here in Buffalo and up in Sheridan. So please, as folks are there, remember to enjoy your family and the reason that we have those holidays. And if you do decide that you need to make some purchases, please shop local, support those businesses that support all of the civic organizations that raise the sales tax that help us pay for so many of those amenities that we enjoy in our community. And let's just have a wonderful season. We live in the best state in the best country, and certainly we are just so honored to be here and to help take care of Johnson County.
Sir, I want to thank you so much for calling in this morning. It is always a pleasure talking with you, sir.
All right. Always good to talk to you, Floyd, and we look forward to it. Have a happy Thanksgiving if I don't see you.
You as well. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Shared.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Community Cupboard.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
This time of year, everything in Wyoming gets tested. Your patience with the wind, your brakes on the ice, and especially your roof. At Brandon 307 Roofing and Exteriors, we know Wyoming weather, and we make sure that your roof passes the test. Our metal roofing, impact-resistant shingles, and expert work keep your cold out and the comfort in. Working with insurance, we take the hassle out of your hands. Go with the name you know. Call Brandon 307 Roofing and Exteriors or visit us at Brandon307.com. Brandon 307, branding Wyoming, one home at a time.
Doug, it's the fourth quarter of the year. Are we still in the game?
You bet, Bob. Tire sales going into overtime. Buy three, get the fourth for a buck through November.
That's a winning drive.
New tires, great grip, winter traction, no fumbles here.
So whether you're tailgating or tackling snowdrifts,
you'll score big at Waring Chevrolet.
Touchdown Tire Sale, WaringSheridan.com.
Help celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States by designing a flag for your Sheridan County community. Sage Community Arts invites designs from each of the 14 cities and towns in the county. One design will be chosen from each to begin flying the first week of January. To enter, scan the QR code in this week's Country Bounty for a link with format information and to submit your design. This contest sponsored in part by Sage Community Arts and Sheridan Media. This public service message is presented by BHJ Property Management at 101 South Main.
Hungry at lunchtime? Then come to lunch together every weekday from 12 to 12:45. Enjoy a home-cooked meal absolutely free. Just neighbors, good food, and a warm welcome. Whether you're short on funds, short on groceries, or a meal with friends, lunch together is for you. Join us at the First Congregational Church, 100 West Work. It's right across from the old First Interstate drive-thru.
Join Sheridan Media and the band Stereo Pilot for an evening of fantastic music and fun. Saturday, November 8th at the Warehouse Gastro Pub. This celebration of community spirit is a fundraiser for the Christmas Wish Program, helping to make Christmas a little merrier for local families. Help make the holidays a little brighter by attending and donating at the Christmas Wish Benefit Concert with Stereo Pilot, Saturday, November 8th, 8 to 10 p.m. at the Warehouse Gastro Pub. Sound by Har Media.
From Billings to Buffalo, this is the News Talk Station, FM 103.9 and 930 AM, KROE.
KROE, Sheridan.